Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yutet, and we were in the middle of discussing what Rabbi Meir's logic would be to say that if Edim are coming along to be Mekayim as Hashtar, and they're saying this is our Chatima, but we signed only because we had a gun to our head, and it wasn't really true, according to Rabbi Meir, they're not believed. So we're trying to figure out why Rabbi Meir would hold that there's some reason not to believe the ultimate Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitr, so to speak. Since you're relying on us to tell you that it's our Chatima, why can't we tell you that we only signed under extreme duress? So yesterday, Rav Chista attempted to give a reasoning for Rabbi Meir by saying that Rabbi Meir holds that Edim, who say that we were Chosem Sheker because we had a gun to our heads, are making themselves Rishoyim. So, I mean, some of the Rishonim explain, obviously, it can't, nobody would hold Mamish Rishonim. But like the Ramban explains, it's a Midat Chasidut that people take for granted, that come hell or high water. You don't do something like that. So even though Mitzad Hadin, we don't paskin like that, that it's even mutter to do that, but that's a machlokas. Some learn it's Davka, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir. But in any event, they are considered to be putting themselves down and even putting oneself down to say that you were not Neuheg with the maximal Hasidus. Why should we believe you? Because when somebody says something about himself that is negative, even though it's not Mamish Mesim Atzmo Rasha, the Shita of your Rav Chista is that according to Rabbi Meir, they're not believed. Or my lay Rava, this is absurd. I mean, if they come, this we did yesterday, and I'm just reviewing it. If they would come to Beis Din and they would say, what should we do? We've got a gun to our heads. Should we sign or should we not? We would tell them, of course, you got to go ahead and sign. The Omar Marin Lecha Davar Shom, maybe if they be Kuach Nefesh Alavodat Koch Avim Vigilui Arayot Vishvichot Amim Bilvad. So now that they signed, we're going to tell them, how could you do such a terrible thing? That's crazy. So therefore, Rabbi Meir could not possibly have said that even with a Pesh Rasa or a Pesh Yitr, they're not believed to tell us the facts. So let's try a whole different approach. And this opens up a new issue, as we promised for today. There's a whole new thing that's going on over here. And that is, the Omer Ravuna Amar Rav, Modeh Bishtar Shikitavo Ein Tzorich L'Kayimo. So the question over here is, this halacha, that we have to go ahead and be mekayem hashtar, the truth is that that kiyum hashtar is actually a takona derabbanan. Because as far as the Torah is concerned, since we allow for a shtar to be considered the equivalent of edus, because it's not normal for a person to forge a shtar, since it's going to end up becoming evident because we can examine the edim and so on and so forth. So the truth is, this is a takana midrabbanan. This is how many of the Rishonim learn, including Tosfos, and that therefore midiraisa, the moment that a person does not taina, that there's something wrong with the shtar, he doesn't claim it's mizuyaf, it doesn't really need kiyum. And the Rabbonim were only Mechayev Akiyum if there's a Taina of Mizuyaf on the Shtar. Therefore, the moment that this person says, I have no problem with the Shtar, then it's not even necessary to be Mechayev the Shtar. And therefore, the Shtar is 100% reliable. The other approach to what Ravuna Amarav is saying is that the very fact that he is Medeh, that creates a shtar that is kosher, and that becomes a shtar that's mikuyam. Once he says that, then we can't believe him, even though it's a pesh azar, and normally we would believe that, because the fact that the other person has the shtar is proof positive that the shtar was not paid off. Because if the shtar was paid off, then you must return the shtar in order to protect the borrower from having to pay twice. So why is the shtar still in the hands of the lender? Therefore, in this case, we don't believe that it would be a pesha asar, pesha yitr, even that. So we have two possibilities. But in any event, Rabbi Meir says, we will not use a pesha asar kineged a shtar. And since modeh b'shtar shekatavo ein tzarich l'kaimo, we don't need these witnesses, Bichlal, either because the shtar is kosher ipso facto by the very fact that you don't tain a mezuyav, or the shtar is kosher because of the fact that you were mekayim it, and the Edom therefore have nothing more to say about the matter. Thank you very much. And there's no pesha asar hua peshitu. Okay, let's go back to look into what Rav Huna Amar Rav says, because it's a very important nekuda. Gufa. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav moda b'shtar shiketavo ein tzorich l'kaimo. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, listen here, sneaking around is not appreciated in these areas. What are you such a sneak for? Basically, you know that that's only true according to Rabbi Meir. And it's the reason, so in other words, Rav Nachman's thing for granted. The Sfara in Rabbi Meir is because of what Rav Huna Amar Rav said. But he says, to Rav Huna, look, this is outrageous. I mean, really what you're saying is that halachic Rabbi Meir. That's what you're saying. And you make it sound like this is a separate halacha. We don't have to worry about the fact that there's a machlokas Rabbi Meir in the Rabbanan and that we won't paskin like a das yachid. You're trying to slip it by us. You know, there's this other halacha. Bull! There's no other halacha. This is Rabbi Meir, and you're a sneak. If you really hold this, isvir halacha Rabbi Meir, then say openly, I stand up tall for Rabbi Meir. Anybody with me? But don't give us this business as if it has nothing to do with the machlokas. Armalos Rav Huna said, so how does Rabbi hold about this? Do you lomaisa? I mean, I'm not sure what you're trying to say. Are you saying that I'm wrong and that I should have admitted it was only true I live in Rabbi Meir? You're just saying I shouldn't have taken credit for Rav in this? What do you mean? I could tell you, said Rav Nachman, look, in very practical, down-to-earth terms, let me spell it out for you. If somebody comes to my Bezdin and he's got a shtar, first thing I tell him is, listen, don't waste this court's time. Before you come in here, get your shtar mekuyam. And then you can come. Because unless it's Bikuyam, I'm not interested in the fact that this guy was Meida, that it's a good star. Because the moment that he'll have a Taina, I don't see it as a star Bikuyam, and we will not say anything about Peshaz or Peshiter. I want to see a star. I'm not going to be able to help you. And therefore, you're just wasting our time. That's the bottom line. So obviously, I don't hold to this. And if you're coming along and you're saying it, then you must admit that it's only true, I believe, by the Rebbe Meir. We paskin like the Rabbana. Om Rav Yonam Rav, how about like this? Somebody says, now, who this somebody is, we'll try to figure out in a moment, but somebody says, yes, this is a good shtar. However, it is a shtar amana. Chaim Kain. A shtar amana is, as the name implies, a shtar that was written out on trust, meaning the loan never really took place, okay? And I am in desperate needs of funds. I've been talking to this guy. He's promising me that he's been going to be getting in money very soon, and he'll make me that loan. So I say to him, but listen, I got to pay the bank by 9 o'clock in the morning. I should have it by 8:30. Oh, my God, I said. It takes so much time. I mean, we're going to have a contract. So why don't you write up the contract now, have it signed, and then when I lend you the money, the contract will already be written. Now, Lemaisa, a contract like that, first of all, in normal circumstances, is stealing. Why? Because it's a shtar mukdam. A shtar mukdam, by definition, is stealing because you're creating the rights with this document for somebody to come to court and to sue for your property from the date on that document, right? Now, suppose after the date on that document, you really did borrow money from somebody else. Now, that guy wants to recover his money by suing you. But when he comes to court, this other guy says, excuse me, I lent money before you, and there's only one piece of property to cover that loan, and I'm going to take it. But he had no right to take it because he never made the loan, right? So that is why it's stealing. Normally, a shtar mukdam is stealing. So in order to understand this sugya, obviously, we're not talking about a case where the guy is stealing. We're talking only about the question about whether the shtar is kosher. There's a way to avoid the stealing, which is very simply this. the person who is taking this or hoping to get this loan not only has a shtar written out on it, but he actually gives the person a shibut from now on the property in the event that the loan is made. You can do that because, remember, a contract allows collection of real estate for, by very virtue of its being a contract. Why is that? Because the reason that we don't allow people to recover real estate generally, in the just because I lent money if I don't have a document, is because there is no way to protect other buyers. Somebody who's coming along and he's buying a loan, please mute yourself. How do we know that this piece of property that I think I'm going to be able to collect from, how do I know that it doesn't have another mortgage against it that was there before mine and I'm going to be stuck without any backup to this loan that I made, trusting that I would be able to collect from you? How do we know that? The way that we provide buyer protection on real estate, which ultimately is not just buyer protection, it ultimately is the basis of the entire real estate market, because otherwise everything is going to come to a grinding halt if there's no way for me to make sure that I can actually recover things. So there won't be any mortgages, won't be any loans, be a disaster. So, okay, so because of that, the very fact that there's a contract is considered to be protection enough. Why is that? Because a contract creates a call, and therefore it's traceable. So if I go now to a property, I forgot what they call that in the U.S., Bruce, you know, what do you call that when you want to trace and see if there's an existing shibud?
Title insurance.
No, that's the insurance, but it's called, what
title
is
search.
What's the company?
A title insurance company does a title search.
Okay, fine. Nobody else will do it if I don't want to buy the insurance. Okay, fine. All right. In any event, so therefore I can do that title search by virtue of the fact that there's a contract. Okay. So this guy is claiming that, yes, this is a shtar, and yes, I did sign it, and everything is kosher except for one thing. The slob never made me the loan. So I don't, well, we don't know who's saying it, but somebody's saying it. So the halach is he's not believed. So ask the Gemara, what do you mean somebody? Who? What, the borrower said it? Of course he's not believed. I understand. If a borrower is allowed to say, well, it's true, I signed this loan document, but, you know, I was trusting him, but he never made the loan. I mean, do I really need somebody to tell me that I cannot have that as a taina? It's ridiculous. Whatever you say means absolutely nothing to us. So what's the point? So, okay. So the question over here, therefore, would be perhaps in a case where the lender said it. I mean, if the lender said it, Gesunter heit, you know, tire akin, tovol av bracha. The lender says, yes, it says I owe him money, but I never really made the melante and chas v'sholom, tear up the contract. It's not a kosher contract. What's wrong? Must be saying, therefore, that the Edom said it, right? Elatakamri Edom. Okay, what's the case? Did we authenticate this shtar because we found another shtar that was authenticated with a henpeck and went through the process in Beis Din and we compared the handwriting? So iktav yadam yatsa mimakom acher, or maybe other Edim came and they claimed that it was theirs, whatever. I mean, so if we didn't have that, then it's a pesha asar. So why would they not be believed? So what would be the meaning that Reb Yud is saying? Well, we don't believe a pesha asar. They're saying this is my handwriting, but. So that's the same thing as saying this is my handwriting, but the ktanima, you know, and so on. I mean, so why is that different than the other pesha asar? So the first approach that we take is, Omar Rava, you know what? That's true. Liolam dekomar loved. The point has to be that the loved said it, and since the borrower said it, and the idea over here is that we're going aliba what we just said about Ravuna, the Omer Ravuna Marab, once he's mode, b'shtar sheketavo, ain't tzorich lekaimo. So therefore, the point over here is that once you've been mode, so then you don't need any kiyum of the shtar. And that's what Reb Yud is basically saying. Since you don't need a kiyum, it doesn't matter, even though he's got a pesha asar, because Again, we have the two pshatim that we said, because mi'ikar adin no kiyam is necessary, and therefore it doesn't matter to us that somebody is mekayim it, and therefore it's perfectly collectible without any kiyam whatsoever. Abaya says, no, we could actually say that the malva, the lender, said that I never made the loan. So like we said before, news, so he's such a sweet person. What's the problem? Why won't we believe him? We won't believe him because by making this admission, he's costing other people good money. How is that? Very simple. He also borrowed money. Now that guy is coming to collect the money from him, and he has this contract. And the guy says, well, you know, based on this contract in which he's owed $1 million for so-and-so, I lent him $1 million. So now I want to collect directly from the bearer by going to the person that owes him the money. And that is acceptable. That's called Shibuda de Reb Nosson. Again, Gavi, please write this down to make sure that you're missing. Chavrusa writes this down. So this is called Shibuda de Reb Nosson. Shibuda de Reb Nosson states, essentially, that if A owes B and B owes C, that C can sue A directly. And that's what happens over here. So that B, who is the lender to C, owes money to A. And now A is going to be unable to get their money because good old Mr. B, who's such a fine, honest man, admits that he never made that $1 million loan and therefore the contract is bottled. Right. So because of that, in an event where he's chav l'achrine, obviously he's not going to be believed. And that would be the point. So Rav Yehuda is saying, in that case, it's chav l'achirim. How is it chav l'achirim? Can Rabbi Nosson? The Tanya, Rabbi Natan omer minayin leno shebe chavero moneh v'chavero b'chavero minayin shemotzim lezeven otanim lezeh. How do we know that if A owes B and B owes C, you can go directly from A to C and C cannot claim, I don't know who you are, get out of here, I'm not going to any kind of court case with you, because I don't need to know you. You could collect on the basis of your being owed money from B. Because the Torah says, Talmud lomar v'natan l'asher asham lo. What we were talking about over there is somebody who's made that he made a shvua sheker on kviras mamay. And when he pays the money to the one that he is guilty towards. That's a funny way of putting it. I mean, all you needed to say is that he should give it to the person that he owes the money to. What do you mean, asham lo? So the point of asham, the word asham, is always used in this context as the principle and not as the sin. So therefore, lasher asham lo means whoever that money is ultimately owed to. And therefore, if he comes along and says that this is a shtar amanan, it's not therefore usable, he's costing the guy in the pusik being able to collect his money. And we now have a third approach. Each one of the possible approaches, love, malve, or edim, there's a way of understanding. So Rav Ashi says we could talk about the edim. And enochinami. The Ktav Yadam is not Yotze Mimokom Acher. So now you had a big problem. What happened to Apesh Asra Apesh Yitir? How come all of a sudden they're not believed? I'll tell you why. Kirev Kahana. The Omer of Kahana. Asur lo la'adam she'ashesh tarabana b'toch b'ito. You're not even allowed to have in your home a contract like that. A contract that says that so-and-so owes me money. When you know that so-and-so does not owe you money because you never even made that loan. So that's all we need. So then you suddenly die of a heart attack this afternoon and they're going to go and collect with the shtar? What, are you crazy keeping something like that in your house? The Omer of Kana. Since it says in the Torah, the al tashken bo ohalecha avla, something that is a complete avla, meaning it has no legality at all. It's not just. How can you keep that in your tent? So if that's the case, that means that the Edim basically signed on an avla. And because of that, Omer of Sheshet, Breda of Edi, Shma Minom and Rav Kana, That proves to us that if Adam are going to come along and say, yes, this is our signature, but we signed it based on the trust between the parties, and even though the guy was willing to give a shibud me'akshav, and there was no stealing that was involved, but the very fact that they signed on something unjust, on an avla, is another mesim atzmo rasha. So we already saw that we will not believe Edim, even with a pesha asar, pesha yiter, in cases where they incriminate themselves. And we already saw that we will not accept that, even when the incrimination, the maximum that we saw, is even when the incrimination is on midas chasidas, or something that people look down at. Kol shekein, where it's something that is a violation of the concept of justice and propriety. So therefore, it won't help in this case to have a pesha asa. Exactly. So it fits in with the standards that we had before for where we will accept a pesha asa. Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, once already we bring up the pasuk of Avla, it's very interesting that the Torah has two words that describe this type of situation where you've got something which is inappropriate for you to be holding because of the impact that it may make in ultimately serving the causes of injustice and even perversion. And what is that? So let's take a look. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, how about if a guy has paid you up the money that he owes you and you still have the contract in your home and you tell him, I'll give it back to you next week. I don't remember where I put it. You're not allowed to keep that contract in your home for the same reason. What happens if you drop dead and now your heirs find this contract and they present the contract? The guy says, what are you, crazy? I paid your father up last week. Well, then how come he still has the contract? Obviously, you're lying and the court will accept the contract. So therefore, you're not allowed to be masha even. You can't leave it in your house. Mishum shenemar, al tashken ba'ohalecha avla, from this same pasuk. And in the Eretz Yisrael, they said, there's another pasuk. The pasuk says, im aven biyadecha harchikehu. If you have aven, now aven is much more powerful than avla. Avla means it's inappropriate, but aven means that it's literally twisted. So if you have such a thing in your hands, get rid of it. What is that referring to? That's referring to a shtar amana or a shtar pasim. Now, what is a shtar pasim? It's very similar to a shtar amana. A shtar pasim, now Mo Willie knows all about this one if he's going to show his face. But what a shtar pasim, there we go. A shtar pasim, I'm sure that Chas v'Shalom Mo Willie doesn't engage in this practice. But as you know, when you broker mortgages, you like to show a really powerful bottom line on the part of the borrower, right? So what happens is this borrower asks somebody that he trusts. So he asks somebody to make out a shtar, and it would say that he, the guy that trusts you, he owes you $1 million. This way you're able to present to the bank a promissory note. I am owed $1 million. Or you might even create a whole, who knows what, a whole mortgage, a whole business. It's all fake. But it's faked in order to show the bank that you've got a better bottom line. And therefore, they'll give you a mortgage. So then that means that the guy that trusted you basically wrote you out a note that kills himself, but he's sure that you're not going to use it. You're not allowed to keep something like that in your rishus either. What if somebody actually, an heir, goes ahead and tries to collect it from him and he trusted you? So when it says, harchikeu, get rid of it, it's referring to either a shtar amana or a shtar pasim. And the other diyuk, which is the end of the pasuk, al tashken ba'alecha avla, that's referring to shtar parua. So in other words, we're being medayik over here, the lashon as being different. Something that is written milechatchila as really a twisting of the truth. The guy wrote a shtar where the loan was never made. The guy wrote a shtar to persuade a bank. It's a bunch of garbage. That is obviously a real oven. Masha Einkein, An avla is to allow a shtar perua. It wasn't written, it was 100% normal. You didn't get around to returning to the guy who paid you, right? You can't call that a twisting of reality. It's just that right now holding it is so not nice. Like what, you're so sure that you're going to live through the night and that your heirs are not going to use it to prosecute him for a loan. So therefore, it's called, as opposed to an aven, it's called an avla. That is a shtar perua. So basically, you're not allowed to keep either a shtar pasim or a shtar perua. But the way we were learning it before, we didn't mention the shtar perua. So that means that Aliba, the Rav Kahana, he really thought it was only talking about a shtar amana. So what is the machlokas between them? So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who said that a shtar perua is considered to be an avla, kol shekein a shtar amana, but mani omar only a shtar amana, he holds that a shtar perua you can't say to a person, you're not allowed to keep that in your rishus. Why? Because who is supposed to pay the costs of the contract? Who pays the lawyer? Or in the case of the Gemara, the sofer, who takes the place of the lawyer in writing up the contract. The borrower is supposed to pay the lawyer. So suppose the borrower paid back the loan, and you say, okay, what about the legal fees? That you were supposed to pay the legal fees. So the guy says, well, I don't have enough money for the legal, next week I'll bring you the legal fees. So you say to him, okay, so when you bring me the fees that you owe, I don't want to be stuck with this. I paid for it to do you a favor so we could get the loan done. But as soon as you pay me back for that, I'll give you back the shtar. And therefore, meanwhile, I'm holding it. He holds you have a right to do that. And therefore, I can't say in general that a shtar perua is considered to be something that you got to get out of your house, because the zimnin demashi le'apshi de safra. There certainly are times when you're going to keep this as a way to have collateral for collecting the legal fees. Itma. Once we're talking already about the ideas of an avla or an oven in your home, we have another amazing halacha, which is that a sefer she'eino muga is also usher to keep. So let's say you have a sefer. According to Rashi, it's not only a sefer Torah. It would be talking about any sefer in Tanakh, or even though at the time that they said this, there were no other sfarim, because you weren't allowed to write anything else. But nowadays, where we have a heter to write up even a Mishnah Berurah, chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. But nowadays, you know, people may forget even the Mishnah Berurah. So we allow you to write up the Mishnah Berurah. We allow you to write up a Gemara, which once upon a time was usher. So now if you have something that is wrong there and you leave it in your home and somebody comes along and uses it thinking that this is correct girsa, we could say potter when something is usher, and mechayev where something is potter, or mutter where something is usher. I mean, that's terrible. And that will be also, that will serve the purposes of twisting the truth. And therefore, some learn that pasuk is referring to that. But since the lashon is al tashken, tashken is a lashon of shchuna. Remember, we had all of the din. At what point is a person considered to be a member of that community? Pinogea dinim, that were in the community, tzedakah, and so on. So the halacha over there is only if he's there 30 days. So that's what we say. You're not allowed to keep it for more than 30 days. Up to 30 days, you can make an appointment with the sofer to be metaken and so on. But beyond that, mikan ve'elech asul shator b'shem shenemar al tashken bo'alecha avla. Don't allow that sefer to become a permanent residence in your home. Okay, let's take a look now, and let me just get the screen back up here. Yeah, let's take a look now at the other issues of what Eini might say in order to be sebech on a pesha asar or a pesha hiter, which functionally cancels their kiyum of a shtar. So what have we been talking? We're talking about all kinds of cases. They may say they're ketanim. And they may say psuleyatis. And that would depend on whether they did an iser in the psuleyatis. And they may say anusim. And that depends on the machlokas of which anusim, the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim. They may say shtar amana. They may say shtar pasim. whatever it is that they say, we've gone through all of the variations and what the different halachas would be according to our different approaches to Peshas or Peshiter. Now, I want to know, how about if there's another point that we haven't discussed yet, and that is called a moda'ah. Now, remember that what a moda'ah is, we know already from Masechet Shabbat, right? Because we know that the entire idea that led to the Egel and so on, and this is the period of the year when we suffer so much from the idea of moda'ah. A moda'ah is where someone basically tells the Edim before they sign, look, guys, you need to know that my life is in danger, because if I don't sell my house to this guy, he is the godfather. They don't call him a godfather for nothing. And I'm going to be found on the bottom of the East River if I don't sell. So I just want you to know that when you witness the sale, you are not witnessing a willing sale at all. And this is called a moda'ah. So when the Edim come along, they say, it's true, we signed on this, but we signed on it only after the guy showed us and made it absolutely clear to us that it was true, that it was not really what it appeared to be. So then what would happen if Edim would come in and say, yes, we did sign. Yes, this is our signature. However, it was an illegal sale. What happens there? Omer Rav Nachman, Edim shamru amana hayadvareinu, which was a case that we spoke about a minute ago, and we said already that enan ne'emanim, and therefore it wouldn't matter, because even if they have a pesha asar, and we have absolutely no other way, remember, we have a klal about pesha asar pesha yiter. We do not believe even pesha asar pesha yiter in the event that he's making himself a rasha, or he's saying something even inappropriate about himself, even if it's not mamish rishas. So rishas is black, but when the Rebbe gets gray, then you got to wonder, it's somewhere in the middle. It's not 100% a world of darkness, but there's a lot of doubt. And look at this. Maybe we can restore some light on the situation. Somehow or other, the fading consciousness of the Rebbe was causing the screen to go gray, which is really another wonderful thing about Zoom. It lets you know whether the person is up, alive, sleeping, or the extent of up. How about a little more light, Tyre Rebbe? Take a look at Shmu. Look at that light. How about getting that? Look at Alon. There we go. You could show off your muscles too. Go for it. Okay, what about if they say, Moda'ah Yudvarin? How about if they say, that, listen, I mean, we didn't do anything wrong. We saved his life by going ahead and signing. So over here, even if the Edim are needed in order to be Mekayim the Shtar, they're still not believed, because we cannot take back something that we already said. And there's a din of Kivan Shehigid, Shuv Eino Chuzer Umagid. Now you'll say, but wait a minute, we've been using Pesha Asar, Pesha Hiter all along without getting into the problem of the issue of Kivan Shehigid, Shuv Eino Chuzer Umagid. I mean, that was the case that we had in the Mishnah. They signed, and now they're claiming that we're Psulei Edus. And this should be exactly the same case, right? What is the difference? The difference is that when they are being made, that this is our Chatima. So it's at that point that they are coming to be Mekayim the Shtar. As long as they say B'toch K'dei Dibur, Aval K'tanim Ayinu, and so on, so it turns out that the Kiyam is no Kiyam, because I never actually end up with a star that is ktiva that is going to contradict what I'm currently saying. The problem is that over here, when they say, yes, we did sign this contract, it's a perfectly valid contract, and it is our signature, and there was nothing wrong with our signature, the moment they say that, then what they're telling us is something that is outside of Because basically, we now have a absolutely valid Rittenstock. They can't come later to contradict this Rittenstock. So where they are the sheresh of creating the Rittenstock and what they're saying is basically telling us, however, it appears to be a Rittenstock, but it isn't. Yes, that's Beshasa. But over here, they're not saying it appears to be a Rittenstock, but it isn't. They're saying it is 100% a Rittenstock, properly written up, properly signed, and properly testifying to an actual event of a sale of a property. We just want you to know that we happen to also be aware of the fact that this person never wanted to sell. Listen, we have a written document that you say that he sold. All of this is irrelevant. You can't come along and say that that document is not valid. Therefore, they're not Neman. Whereas Mar Bar Rav Ashi Omar, if they say Amana Yudvarenu, you're right. They're not believed. But if they say Moda'a Yudvarenu, they are believed. Why? It's very different. The one that was considered to be a Moda'a, is that Mutter? Yes, of course. I'm coming to help the guy save his life, right? He wants to sell the house to the mafia. Okay, so fine. So I'm going to write it up for him. And then afterwards, he's going to try to deal with it legally by the fact that he let us know that he was coerced into it. But this one, Anamana, there was no heter to write that. And we've already said, in a case where you are testifying against yourself and you're saying you did something wrong by signing, HaPesha Asar is not a kosher Pesha Asar. And therefore, it's the same exact case over here. If they're saying there was no such event, then there's no difference between saying that I was a katan and so on. Because the same thing is when they say, we signed because we were under duress. And we signed because he was under duress, is exactly the same thing. That is saying that this was not a real kosher shtar, but we didn't do anything wrong. I got a brilliant question. Brilliant question. They are not contradicting their testimony in any way. They're adding to their testimony. So suppose they say like this. Yes, we signed on the shtar. However, the shtar was based on a year from the time that they made the sale that this person was supposed to be Mekayim a Tanai. Maybe the Tanai was that he would let him marry his daughter. I don't know, whatever it is, something totally irrelevant to the sale. However, the guy definitely said, look, I'm doing this, but it's only almanat that you give me your daughter as a wife in the next 10 years. Okay, 10 years pass, and the guy's not Mekayim the shtar. So now the Edim want to come along, and they're going to be Mekayim their Chatima, and they're going to add, but we just want you to know that there was an additional Tanai. You better go find out, Bezdin, whether the guy was Mekayim that Tanai or not, because the sale will only be good if by now, which is 10 years from then, this guy was given his daughter. What's the din over there? Tanai Yudvarenu. So now, it's true that Reb Nachman said that in the case of a Moda'a or an Amana, we don't believe them. Why don't we believe them? Because they're Ka'akri L'Shtara. Because they cannot turn around after we have a written testimony and come along and try to say that you cannot believe what was written there. That's called Kivin Shigit, Shuvenu Chozer Umagid. In the ultimate sense that we're going to use our Dvarim Baal Peh and we're going to cancel what was in the Ksav. You can't do this. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, when you're claiming that there was a contract that was built on a condition and the condition wasn't fulfilled, so for all intents and purposes, they're canceling the sale. So we shouldn't believe them any more than we would believe Moda Avamana. Or, look, a condition is not actually being acre. They're saying, no, wait a minute over here. Don't read stuff into our words. We stand by what we wrote 100%. And all that we were told to sign on was the fact of the sale. We just want you to know that we witnessed that sale. And it was on condition. Right, the condition is something that's 10 years in anyway. It's embarrassing. You know, I'm selling you this for you to give me my daughter. But we were there. And that's what the guy said. So maybe we should view it tonight as being a completely different subject. And only the fact is that since we need them in terms of Pesha Asa in order to be Mekayim the Shtar, so therefore they should be believed based on that, because we're not coming to contradict what it was that was said before. Said Reb Nachman, I can only tell you the bottom line again, gentlemen. And that is when people come into my courtroom, first thing I say to them, when they tell me that there's an argument over here about conditions, I say to them, don't waste your time, guys. If there was a condition, take care of being Mekayim the condition, prove that you've got the conditions Mekuyam, and then come in here and we'll talk about it. I cannot be a party to any type of case which is going to claim that we will not accept testimony about conditions. I do accept testimony on conditions, assuming, of course, that they have a Pesha Asa. So therefore, if they have a Pesha Asa, then they're not considered to being Oikir the Shtar. They're considered to be adding the Shtar. So in other words, Aliba Reb Nachman, a Pesha Asa is either in a case where you're not really making a Kiyum, because the same moment that you remember, it's all betoch kedei dibur. And the same moment that you're giving the kiyum to the Tanai, you're saying, however, we were not kosher witnesses because we were kitanim, or because we were under duress, or we were psulim in a case where the psulim would be kirva and not because of oisatz meirasha. So in those cases, we never were mekayim to start. Therefore, Reb Nachman, of course, will accept it. So that, yes, that's certainly good. But there's something more that you can do. You can utilize your Pesha Asar for adding conditions that were not written, because that's not considered to be a Kivan Shigit. Shuv Eino Chozer Umagid. And what about saying that it was a Shtar Amana, a Shtar Pasim, a Shtar Moda? That you can't do. Why? Because you cannot contradict something by utilizing a taina against yourself. And you cannot contradict something which is on its face completely kosher and say it really was about something that is not binding because there was a moda'ah. That's a contradiction. So either because ein ad meisim atzmo rasha, not believed. If it's after kedei dibur, not believed. If it involves kivan shigit tshuva nechozer umagid, not believed. But is believed where there's no problem of ein ad meisim atzmo rasha? Yes, if it's betoch kedei dibur. If it's something that is an addition to a previously existing reality, and we need what you're saying to be mekayim the shtar, yes. Okay, things are starting to clear up a little bit. This is Reb Nachman Shita. How about in a case where only one of the two edim say that there was a condition? What happens then? So now we run into another problem, gentlemen. The other problem is this edut mukheshet? Because remember, if we have two witnesses that don't agree with each other, then we don't have any witnesses, because we don't accept edim that are makhesh each other. What would be the din if one of the witnesses claims that there was a tanai and the other one doesn't? He doesn't know of any tanai. So ed echad omer tanai. The Eid Echad Omer Eino Tanai. And they're both saying this is our signatures. So bottom line is, says Rav Papa, look, are both of them saying that this is a good shtar and that it was signed properly and it's got two kosher edim on it? Yes. So Tarvayo B'shtar Ma'al Yakom Izhad. The question of one of the witnesses coming along and saying, well, I know that there was also a Tanai. There was a condition that was added. Fine. So he's an Eid Echad. We cannot pay any attention to an Eid Echad where there are two witnesses contradicting him. Two witnesses? Yes. You have a shtar signed by two witnesses? That was Mekuyam? Okay. You don't have the Pesha Asar of two witnesses. You only have one witness. Okay. So then you've got one witness that's coming to contradict two witnesses. You can't do that. So therefore the shtar is kosher and the Tanai is. Don't know anything about that. If that's true, then the way that you just analyzed it would mean that Reb Nachman should have said that even if both of them say there's a Tanai, it's no good. Because there's no way that that can work. Because you're saying once they say those words, yes, this is my signature. So then they're Mekayim the Shtar, right? So then why did Reb Nachman say that even in a case where both of them say there was a Tanai, why should they be believed? Don't we say that we have basically a Kivan Shigat Shimon HaKlozer HaMakid case? You're saying that the Shtar is 100%. So if the Shtar is 100%, who are they to say that there was something else that will, in effect, invalidate the sale? Huh? Ella, obviously what Reb Nachman was saying in the first place, is that Amrinan Hani Lamekar Sa'adu Tayo Ka'atu. What it is that they're coming is to say, look, we may be saying that this is our signatures, but don't jump to conclusion that that means that the Shtar is acceptable as written. We are, in a sense, conditionally telling you that this is a kosher Shtar. Conditionally, because there was a condition. Okay, so then you're saying, Alibet Reb Nachman, that what they're doing is they're changing the nature of the words that they just said. Yes, this is my signature. And they are saying, yes, this is my signature on something which, if there was a condition that was fulfilled, I'm ready to stand behind my signature. So that means they are changing the way that they were Mekayim the Shtar. So then if one comes along and changes the way that it was Mekayim the Shtar, then that means we do not have a fully Mekuyam Shtar. We have a Mekuyam Shtar with an understanding that there was a Tanai. So I don't understand what the difference is. If you're going to allow two people to say there was a Tanai, then you have to allow one person to say there was a Tanai. So then Hai Nami, this one aide, he's coming to say, excuse me, gentlemen, don't use that henpeck. Get rid of that stamper. I am not telling you that this Tanai, the Shtar, is ready to be stamped. I'm telling you that you better write down the fact that it's only going to be useful in the event that a Shtar is Mekuyam, and I'm not ready to stand behind my signature. And in fact, that's how we paskin, that the Hilchot HaKrevunah B'Reder of Yeshua, that we do not have a Shtar Mekuyam unless the guy is Mekayim the Tanai, even though it was only one aid that says that you need the Kiyam of the Tanai. Tana Rabbanan, another case. What if you have two witnesses who died after they signed on the Shtar? Now two witnesses come who recognize their signature, and they say, yes, indeed, this is their Ktav Yadam. However, we know that they were forced into signing. We know that they were Ktanim. We know that they were Psulei Edus. Then these other people would be believed because of the fact that it's their Pesh Asar. Again, the word Asar is loosely used. Pesh Asar simply means if we need to come on to what you're saying, then we cannot ignore part of it, unless, of course, we talk about Pagin and Dibura, which we spoke about before, in terms of Ein Adam Meisim Atzmo Rasha. But here, these are other people. And these other people are saying, it's all very nice. Yes, it's their signature. But if you're going to believe us that it's their signature, then believe us that they were Psulei Edus at the time. So therefore, they are Ne'amanim with their Pesha Asar. But if we have other witnesses who are ready to say that this is Ktav Yadam, or we have another Shtar where we can utilize handwriting analysis to prove that it's Ktav Yadam, Shaya Ktav Yadam Yotzei Mimakom Acher, but this is only if the Makom Acher is a valid Shtar that has gone through a process of Arar. Arar means that somebody claimed it was Mizuyaf, and it went through the whole analysis in a different Bezdin, which ultimately found it to be kosher and henpecked it. So therefore, in that case, Ein Elu Ne'amanim, because then we do not have a Pesh Asar, Pesh Yitir. So I understand what you're saying. And therefore, what's the idea that Magbina Beke Bishtara Ma'alya? You're telling me that they're not believed and will use this Shtar? Because we have another, I understand, we have witnesses that just came and said that we know that this Shtar is puzzle because of the fact that these Edom were Ketanim. And you're saying, well, why should I believe them? After all, I have my handwriting analysis expert. That's ridiculous. How can we, I mean, it's at the most, it's Trey, right? We have these two witnesses say that it's kosher shtar. We have these two witnesses say it's not a kosher shtar. So how can you use this shtar as enough to be gova with? I don't understand what you're saying. Omer of Sheshes, it's the small print, buddy. It's always the small print. If you hold that hakasha is trilat hazama, then this all begins to make sense. What does that mean, hakasha trilat hazama? Well, it's actually being used here in a very loose sense. Gavi, are you here? What happened to Gavi? He ran away. Gavi, I need you to write this down to tell your chavrusa. Whew. Man, oh man. First of all, he's got to make a card about hakasha, a card about hazama, and then a card about hakasha trilat hazama. So remember that what hakasha means is that two witnesses contradict another two witnesses about the facts. Hazama means two witnesses come along and they say, we don't know anything about the facts. But what we do know is that these witnesses don't know anything about the facts either, because they were with us at a football game and they claimed to be sitting there witnessing all of this exactly on that day. And therefore, that puts the witnesses in the defendant's chair, right? Because now we're attacking them. But the halacha is that in order to, Baruch Avram, come back to us. Your screen is turning dim. There we go. Very gradual brightening there. So there, the halacha is, if you want to put someone in a defendant's chair, he's got to be present. You can't bring him to court if he can't, is not in court. And now he doesn't have a chance to defend himself. So therefore, there's no way, if you hold that in every case of hakasha, there is always a brewing element of accusing these witnesses of lying, and therefore, in a sense, opening the door to hazama. That's how we're using the meaning of hakasha tchilat hazama in this sugya. You are unable to believe what they are saying as treu trei because those witnesses died, and therefore they can't be present in the courtroom. What? And you're telling me so because of the small print, this is a technicality, man. I understand. The guy is dead. You're telling me I have witnesses that say that he was apostle aid at the time that he signed. Well, I mean, we can't listen to you because technically speaking, hakasha trilat hazama, so therefore we're going to be able to use this contract even though you're telling us it's a piece of garbage. That's crazy. Magbina bekeb shtar ma'ayata. My Travis Train, you know, the bottom line is, do we have two against two? Yes, we do. Don't give me this business. Therefore, we should use it. Doesn't make sense in this case. But let's just finish up this halacha. So because of this, tomorrow we'll discuss the problem. As Rav Nachman points out, it makes no sense that we should, because of this, be allowed to actually collect. And we'll see, it doesn't really mean this. And I don't want to keep you any longer. So I'll leave you at the end of your seats, I hope. And then we'll be able to finish the sugya tomorrow. So let's just review what we did today. We get a much better sense of where it is that we will accept a peshas or a peshiter in the more complex case of edus, because believing a peshas or a peshiter in the context of edus raises all the other problems about kiven shigit shuvin echozru magid, what the status is of a kiyamashtar, is a kiyamashtar diraiser dirabonan, is it considered to be a psul because of the fact that it's after toch kidei dibor. None of this is important when it comes to non-edus Pesha Azra Pesha Iter, you see? And that's why it's very important for us to go through this. What about in a case where there's other issues, such as Einad Amesim Atzmo Rasha? Or how about just not being Nema to say something that is negative in any sense about yourself? These are all some of the issues that we spoke about. Today we're talking about at the end, but we haven't completed it yet, what the din would be of additions to testimony, whether they're considered to be an actual change of testimony. That was the question of adding it tonight. And then we have the issue of other people trying to pass the testimony? Where will we accept it as trei u trei? And where will we actually pasul the shtar v'ikra din and tear up that shtar so that nobody else is going to be able to use it, which would have happened in cases where we accepted it was a shtar amana, shtar pasim, or a shtar porua. Obviously, we wouldn't just not use it. We would tear it up to make sure nobody else comes to use it either.